Right, this is going to be another episode of Banter Give and Go. As you will know, I say it every episode, season still hasn't started, has it? So since it hasn't happened, logically, we can't be talking about the 2023/2024 season. It's a bit like CS:GO 2, innit? We're all waiting for it. We're here already, but it hasn't, so we're just going to have to talk about history. So what we thought we'd do is, we'll do some episodes where we just pick a season and sort of do like a rewind, like we go back in time, we look into some of the old things, tell old stories. And so for the first one, funny thing is, people will actually think, Maui, if they're fans of mine, that I picked this season, because I think I've told people this was actually one of the first seasons where I sort of came back to the NBA from not being a boy and, like, as an adult, actually tried to watch it as a real sport, and I watched loads of the games, and I sort of then went back from this point historically on a bunch of stuff. So the season we're going to do is going to be the 2005-2006 season, but it's actually Maui that picked this one. So the first question would be, what was the impetus for this specific season? Like, so someone else is going to seem a bit arbitrary, right? How did you pick 2006 as the season?
Yeah, there's just a lot of fun storylines that went into this one. I'd say a real deep reason is because one of my friends named Shu, he was actually like, this season is crazy, and so you should really dive deeper into this one, because right. He started listening to this podcast and he was saying this would be a really cool one for you and Thorin to break down. And then when I started kind of looking at it and even comparing some of the other seasons, there's a lot of things that I just kind of remembered about this, because I was 13 when this season was going off. I was 12 to 13 years old, and so I was kind of, you know, I was aware of what the NBA space was, but I did not have the analytical mind that I have today when I watch the game. So I just thought, what a good season to kick it off with, because there's just, I mean, we'll get into all these little narratives and storylines.
Oh, there's so many for this one. You're right. By the way, whoever your friend is, at least for this particular case, he did show the patrician's taste, because actually, if you want to go on a million different angles, this might be one of the most narrative-packed seasons of, like, that entire decade. Like, it's actually low-key a mega one, because, like, for example, like, obviously I won't go too far in it, we'll just lightly touch and then we'll pick where we want to do the deep dive. But if you want to, like, a horizontal view, I'll tell you, like, first things first, if a lot of the classic players of the 2000s and 2010s, this is when they're in their prime. Like, this is the season when Kobe has the most points, and when Tim Duncan's still in his prime, and Kevin Garnett's a monster, and even Shaq's still really good, and people like Allen Iverson are still half decent, Tracy McGrady. Like, all those 2000s players you think of when you make that, like, list of the really good, they're all mega at this point in time. They're all, but Jason Kidd's still really good, Steve Nash, all, every team basically at the top has, like, a really legit all-star. And then also, I actually think, without, again, going too deep on individual ones, this is one of the NBA seasons where I actually think there were the most legit actual potential champions. Like, if you go and look for real, like, four or five teams really could have won the chip this season, and it wouldn't have been, like, you know, a fluke or, like, what the hell's... Like, this actually was one where it was really good. And in fact, this is even where I would say, after this was when the East went into a bit more of a drought for me. Like, this is when the East's still pretty good, because obviously Shaq's gone to the Heat, and they've still got the Pistons and Monsters. The Pacers are still a quality side. So, like, this was even when there was even still a decent amount of sort of, like, parity between... So, however he picked it, get full points for this one. I do actually think, before we get into it, people will see by the end of the episode, there are a lot of really good narratives. This isn't one where it's, you know, like, we're just going to talk about the champion or the person who's the highest scorer. I think there's so many angles we can go. So what's the first thing you want to go into? You tell me the first angle and we'll start to tease it apart. Where do you want to go first?
Well, we could start with... like, I think it would be fitting to end with maybe the championship and how the season all wrapped up. So we could start with kind of more regular season stuff.
Yeah,
so
let's do it.
One thing I would bring up first would be, this is Steve Nash's MVP season.
Yep,
and
second
how,
one.
How, yeah, his second in a row that he was able to capture when he was playing for the Suns. And when I was looking back at a lot of the footage of Steve Nash in this one, I was kind of trying to think to myself, okay, who does he remind me of most? And he's kind of like... In this season, a lot of his great moments, it feels a lot like if you gave Steph Curry a slightly, like, better balance, if you gave him like a little bit more ball dominance, and you kind of said, you're not going to shoot as much, but you're going to look for more passes more frequently. Like, it's basically, to me, like, he's like a prototypical modern point guard. Like, if you put this version of Steve Nash in the NBA today, I mean, you're in such a great position. Yeah. And so his style of play aged so well. And it really, it's almost like you would have wanted him to just take more shots, because he was shooting such a good percentage that he was looking for oftentimes the best shot. But if you just said, you know what, if you want to rip it from three, three more times per game, we're probably going to end up actually having a better offensive rating overall, because sometimes he's feeding it to, I mean, Stoudemire was fantastic, so that was always a good secondary role man for him. But for some of the other guys on the team, it would probably, the reason they had such good seasons is because Nash was so good at spoon feeding them layup type shots. So I'd say that if you have any thoughts about Steve Nash, he was just fantastic.
Even though the last episode, maybe like the last one, maybe like the one where it was about the overrated players, I did say famously that I actually think Steve Nash shouldn't have won those MVPs. Like, basically, like, I put it this way, Maui, I don't care how good the team is. I don't think anyone who gets like 18 points and 11 assists, like, that's just not the best player in basketball. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, in this particular case, like I say, because he is actually sort of a pass first point guard, in my opinion, by definition, that almost can't be the best player, because if he was the best player, why is he passing the ball to someone else? Do you know what I mean? Like, and in fact, I'll tie it into what you're saying though. This is what might surprise people, because I've actually said this in the past in a video. Maybe I did like an AMA on my own channel somewhere. I actually do think though, Steve Nash is actually almost a victim of this era where it was like there was less points scored and he was actually trying to be more of a pass point guard. Because the joke is, Steve Nash actually did play very unselfishly, like you're saying. Like, he was actually more like Jason Kidd. But the reason why that's weird to me is, if people don't know, Jason Kidd famously wasn't a very good shooter for most of his career. Steve Nash is a phenomenal shooter. It's like you're saying, the weirdest thing is, because they hadn't figured out the analytics shit, although ironically, this team essentially was leading the fucking way for the pioneering of small ball and three-point shooting and shoot as many shots as you can and just get back on the... They basically were already playing this style of basketball. But the difference is, like you say, they hadn't understood. You have to tell Steve Nash, he is so fucking good at all forms of shooting. Scale up. You need to take, like, fuck three. I'd tell him to take five more shots, mate. Especially 3 points, like you'll say. He should be taking at least three or four more. Because if people don't know, this guy was an extremely good shooter in all regards. Like one of the reasons why his whole game was mega in these seasons was he would just permanently penetrate and then just pass to someone. And if you foul him, he's probably the best free... I think he might be the best free shooter ever, by the way. Like, he was unbelievable. Like, his form is perfect. He hits him every time. He really is the guy you can just guarantee will hit the 90% free throws. So he can hit the three-pointer amazingly. He really... If people don't know, he's one of the most obvious, like, 50, 40, 90 people ever in history. Like, him and Dirk really could do it anytime they wanted, it felt like. So he was phenomenal. But I actually think he was almost underused, because the funny thing is, this is in some ways, because they're trying to play soap tempo, they're trying to be like some 80s Lakers Showtime shit. And so everyone remembers it wasn't actually Nash individually, it was more like the amazing passes, the way he would like dance around the fucking paint and then pass off. His ability to find the open man was also incredible. He actually did have insane vision. I do think, like, I actually think as a point guard he's underrated. I just think as an overall player, because he did win MVP, I think that makes him overrated. But no, I agree. I thought this was easily his peak as a player. And the other thing is as well, here's the thing. I think the real problem, like I said, was that they gave him the 2005 MVP. So then their logic was like, but he's better this season. So what happened is, because in this season, if people don't know, this was the one where Stoudemire only played 3 games and got injured, but they were still a really good team. So the problem is, it made the narrative insane, didn't it? So it was like, wait a minute, so they're still like one of the best teams in the NBA, but they've lost like their star player. Like, that just made it so they were always going to give him narratively the, because then it must be you. And here's the thing, to some degree it was. Like, if you look at the pieces he has, this team outside of Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire is more like a Spurs team. It's like players where, like, individually, are any of them really like all NBA? Like Sean Marion's like borderline. People like Boris Diaw, like, can be good in the right... It's more like, I think people gave a lot of credit to Steve Nash and Dan Tony for this team, basically. They think it was like coach set the team up with all the sort of complimentary pieces, and then Steve Nash ran the show. So, like, I won't hate on the team. They were mega. By the way, they're one of the teams in that mix I said before. They could have won the NBA this season. The problem was, though, this is one thing I want to throw in there and throw it back to you, though. This is why, you know, when everyone famously dunks on Charles Barkley when the Warriors won the first season, because he used to have, like me, he has his own principles of the game, right? And his most famous principle ever is, you don't win the championship with jump shooting teams, right? Now, here's the funny thing. You know, everyone dunked on him. I always wanted to go, bro, you are aware you're dunking on him when the team that won probably had the two best jump shooters ever. Like, you know, do you know the definition of an outlier? Like, that proves his point. And not only that, by the way, the first one, they barely fucking won. Like, if anything, he was actually right, even as he was wrong. And one of the reasons, this is why I bring it up, one of the reasons why I know he's right is because this is the team that proved it. This team in the regular season, dude, it's like the Warriors. They could beat anyone. They could blow anyone out of the court with a 130-point game. But the problem is, when you go to the playoffs, and especially they're the Western Conference, dude, and you're playing a game against, like, the Mavericks, the Spurs, they're just going to grind you out in half court, mate. You know what I mean? Someone like Tim Duncan's just going to be all day long. Like, you're not going to get that same game. People are going to get nervous, so you're not hitting every three-pointer that's open. Like, sadly, like the pros and the cons of this team is why I actually think they were perfectly ranked in all senses. Like, they did win about the amount of games they should. They went about as far as they should in the playoffs. It did make sense to me they didn't win, but they were an excellent team. I'll give them credit. Like, that style, it was mega entertaining, put it that way. Like, if you ever wanted to go watch an old game, this team had some really entertaining games. Like I say, if you're a fan of the modern style of, like, fast-paced small ball, you could watch this team today and you'll enjoy it. You could go back and enjoy this. It won't be like if you watch, like, a Pacers-Pistons game and it's in the half court and, like, the game ends, like, 84 to 83. It's not going to be one of those. They can actually play, like, modern basketball, basically.
Yeah.
What do you think on that angle, though? Because, as I say, like, back then, it was actually the philosophy that, like, jump shooting wasn't the game. It was still, like, about the post and two-point shots and stuff, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when the Warriors went on their championship run, they actually, I think it was the Western Conference semifinals, they were actually losing to the Grizzlies 2-1 at one point in that series because the jump shooting wasn't really working for them. They made a really big defensive switch, which just meant that Bogut was going to float around and not actually guard Tony Allen. But, like, no, there's flaws in, like, having a team where you're just, I mean, it's why still to this day, when we watch, like, a team that doesn't have shooters as good as Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, pace and space just doesn't seem like an effective style of play. But I like watching basketball, though. Back when I went through this season and I started watching a lot of the games back and watching, like, how our team's playing and everything like that, yeah, there weren't, like, jump shooting was just not a big thing. There were only a couple people in the league that were shooting as well as Steve Nash, and no one was doing it with significant volume. Like, it was basically, it wasn't the keystone of anyone's game plan. Like, it was a lot of running it through the big man. Like, you think of all these great big men that were actually around in this season, and it was like, I mean, you obviously had Shaq still, you had Nowitzki himself, Tim Duncan, you had, like Ben Wallace was actually, like, a force, too.
He's still around, yeah, of course.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, yeah, this was also a Yao Ming season, too.
Yao Ming was mega, yeah.
Yeah, so there were a lot of these, like, big men who were kind of taking over in terms of, and you had a couple of the outside shooting guys. Like, we talked about Chauncey Billups on underrated players last time around, and he was, you know, one of those people that we just think you could have, if you played modern analytics, just taken way more shots. You could have been so much more effective from range. But yeah, no, that's just not the philosophy at the time. So people like Nash, probably because of his percentages, in some ways, it almost was like ushering in the potential for a new era, but people just didn't connect two and two yet together at the time.
Yeah, basically, to make that explicit, what Maui's saying there is, if you just look at Steve Nash's percentages and how consistent they are, it's just obvious he should just scale his game up and try, like, a few more shots and see if it maintains. And spoiler, I think at this point we could just say it would have, like, because it just worked with so many other players. To echo what you're saying, though, the reason you know that it's, like, mentally no one was in the space where you're allowed to just shoot loads of threes is even, like, Ray Allen, if people don't know, used to barely shoot that many threes. Like, he would shoot more than everyone else, but the difference is his would be, like, he'd shoot, like, six or seven a game or something, and that was considered crazy. Like, the joke is, if you ever go and watch, like, a Ray Allen 40 bomb, most of it's just long two-pointers that are really good. But, like, even he didn't know, like, essentially I should just max out as many possible threes as I can.
Yeah, and then I guess I want to broach the subject on Wade a little bit here. Like, the way that he was playing the game was like you don't really get this as much anymore, where you get these shooting guards. Even Kobe, to an extent, was kind of like this too. These shooting guards that are more like slashers, as opposed to now where they're spot up shooters. Like, that the whole position has slightly changed to just being a position where, if you're a shooting guard, you're going to run a lot of screens for him and everything like that. And the way that they would play around a lot of shooting guards, including Kobe, including Wade, was that they would try to set them up by getting them in motion, catching the ball. And they would try to then use the speed and the fact that they have all that momentum already beating their man around a curl or a screen to try to then attack the basket or pull up for a good mid-range shot. Today, you're just going to see a lot more, like, pick and pop and kind of plays where, like, the pick and roll is so much more in this era, I would say, about the roll than it is about the pop. So, like, the style of offense has clearly changed. And you're going to also see, when you watch a lot of these games back, that people are just like there's three people crowding the paint. It's not nearly as bad as it was in, like, the 90s or 80s, where you just have a massive bodies that are in the paint ready to just, like, take anybody down with them. But this era is, like, you're seeing the floor spaced out a little bit more than, like, the Jordan era, but you're definitely not seeing it like today whatsoever.
I mean, let's just segue, because obviously at some point in this one, we're going to talk about Kobe and the Lakers, because if people don't know, this was the season when Kobe had the most points he's ever had. He had like 35 points in the season. And part of the reason why was when they traded Shaq. If you don't know how it works in the NBA, there's two ways it works. Either two teams that have superstars, this is very rare, want to trade superstars. Like I said, that's extremely rare that people do that. Or you trade a superstar like this Damian Lillard one, and essentially you're just going to get like the salary equivalent, which will just mean like four players that are nowhere near as good as that player. And it never really makes sense. It's why it also, if people don't know, when they traded Shaq from the Lakers, they essentially did that. They got like half a dozen players. And then famously, eventually they did this trade where they traded some of them for Kwame Brown, who had an enormous contract at the time. People don't know, even though he was a bad player. So essentially in these years, the Lakers knowingly are having a rebuild. And when you take on a really big contract like that, you're almost like doing a favor to the other team. So essentially they know that they're not actually like a contender team. So if people don't know, this is one season where like there's no universe where you can ever tell me like Kobe's a chucker. Like the joke is he maybe should have even just taken every shot. Like this team was so appallingly bad, like there is never a he's even those pictures where he's taken like three people, it's right, like I know the players that he was going to pass to me and they would have missed the shot, like they were bad. It's why actually the narrative at the time was so stupid, because as far as I can tell, he probably was a bit of a diva and quite arrogant and elitist in the championship Lakers teams earlier. But when people started stressing on this team, like, be more unselfish, be like, you know, be like Steve Nash, it's like, bruh, if he had the players, you could do it. There's no one to do that with. Like, there'd be no point doing like a Steve Nash dance among the pit and then pass like, you know, like Brian Cook or fucking, you know, some guy like that, like Chris Mim. Like, they're not going to win the game for you. Then, like, the joke is most of those players after this lineup were never heard of again in the NBA. They went to benches, to the back of the bench, and just exited the NBA like 3 years later. Like, most of this lineup, you'll never see play again, mate. Most of these names people won't even remember. When they look this up, you'll see Kobe. This is what will already tell you you're in trouble. Lamar Odom's your second best player, by the way. You know, the guy who was like the sixth man on the championship. He's your second best. And then after that, no joke, people like Luke Walton are like your third best player on this team. Like, it's insane how bad this team was. But what I was going to get to tie in as a segue, was that's actually why I actually do think these seasons of Kobe's play are some of the best players of basketball ever. Because as you say, because 2006 is a couple of years after they changed the defensive rules, like for things like hand check, the zone had already come in. Part of the reason they did that explicitly, by the way, you can go and look, the commissioners will tell you this, is they hated the era when the Pistons were on top and it was like an 85-point game, and essentially they beat you by not letting you play basketball, by making you miss and beat you up in the paint and guard you really. Because they hated that, they knew that essentially fans, I mean, they're not wrong, fans want what it is now. Everyone shooting loads, everyone making loads of shots, and then I make 20 shots and you make 18, so I win. That's what people think is fun, like more of a fairground sort of like fireworks approach, I would say. Whereas this is like closer to like real basketball to me. There's a lot of half-court play, if you don't know. There's not a lot of like court to end-to-end stuff. It's not a lot of, except for the Suns who were the outlier, like I say. A lot of this is that you go into a half-court set, and as you say, if you've got like an amazing perimeter player, half the time he's taken a contested difficult two-point mid-range shot. Like, there's if it's open, obviously they all go to the basket. And this is when, by the way, all those players, Wade, Kobe, McGrady, they're doing all those amazing ones where, you know, you do the flying one where you start this side of the basket, you go under it while still in midair, and then you put it up like and reverse it in off. Basically what Steph Curry does, but they were doing this like all the time. Like, that's what you have to do, though, because as you say, it's mega congested paint. People know you just stand inside and stop people getting in. So the defense in this era is pretty good, actually. And as you said, the spacing is terrible. This might actually be, no joke, one of the worst eras of spacing ever. So when people tell me stuff like, that Kobe just made it harder for, he just liked to take hard shots. It's like, you should just go see the shots that are available in a game like this when you have a team as bad as him, mate. Like, essentially, almost every shot's a bad shot, because, like, you know, they only have to guard you, don't they? There's no point guarding anyone else. So, like, low-key, I actually think, even though the team was shit, like, this is just individually, if people don't know, this is like the season when Harden had all those injuries, which is his best output year. You just have the ultimate green light. Like, essentially, you know you can't win the championship, so you may as well just let your star player go off, the logic. So, if you like gunning, this was a mega season for that. Like, essentially every game he was scoring 30 points, 40 points. Like, it actually became, no joke, people used to take for granted when he'd have 50, dude. Like, when he'd have 40, they'd go, he had a quiet night. You'd like, it's only now I realise, even in this era of inflated scoring, 40's still insane. Like, I don't think people know. Do people watching this show know LeBron has like 160 point game ever? And that was like a really extreme, so like, I think people actually take for granted some of the scoring in this era. Because I actually think this was a pretty hard era to score points in. But some of the really good players were cooking in this era, mate.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty obvious when you would see just Kobe. I mean, like, you were going down some of the names that were he was playing with, like Smush, and then you see like Smush Parker and like Brian Cook that were also on this Lakers roster at the same time. You're
Like I
just
say,
like,
who are those people? Those could be on a fucking milk carton somewhere, couldn't they? Like, whoever heard of them after this team, mate? No one. No one ever.
Exactly. This is no nothing at all. Which is also like I actually let's just open this up. This is an idea I had when I was watching Wade and Kobe both in the season, it also kind of made me a little bit disappointed that in some ways that just Wade even was able to win with Shaq. Because it's like if you put Kobe next to Shaq again on this Miami team, they would have just been even better. Like this is the 1-to-1 would have been so perfect. And it's all obviously we've seen so much of Kobe with Shaq that it's not even hard to imagine it at all. But it's just that
Oh.
if you put some of the people like Alonzo Mourning, like and all these other people that were on the Miami Heat roster with Kobe instead of Wade, it's almost like you wouldn't even like Wade was obviously a good player. Like, don't get me, I'm not gonna
No, it was.
slight Wade
Yeah.
here or anything like that, but it's just that Kobe was almost better in every single facet. There's so few things I could actually pick out when I was watching them both play in the season where I was like, yeah, Kobe wouldn't have done that. Or, oh yeah, that was good for Wade. And I couldn't imagine any move where Wade does it. I'm like, that's just better than Kobe. Like honestly, do you ever see moments when you were watching this where you're like, man, Wade is going above and beyond what Kobe's able to do in the same season?
No. I mean, the only area maybe slightly is like, I'll say this, like technically Kobe had an injury in like 2003 to 2004. It's actually why he was in Colorado for that infamous thing he got in trouble for, where he was getting like knee surgery. I will say after that surgery, he was never quite like as physically good. He was still very good. Whereas like Wade was in his absolute prime at this point in time. It was before he'd had his injuries. So maybe like a couple of moves to the basket, he might like have a first step on him or something. But I agree, every other aspect of the game, he would be better in, especially because he's obviously way more tenured. Like Wade's been in the league like 2-3 seasons at this point in time. And in this scenario, he's still working out his dynamic with Shaq. Like, I'm sure at the time he thought maybe this is Shaq's team. I'm supposed to do it, still lose that whole thing. Also, if people don't know, that whole thing about Kobe and Shaq was only about personalities. If you ever watched them play, the joke is you would never know it, dude. Like, that's why they really are the great outlier for the idea. Normally, it's more like you don't have to like someone to win. They did at times seem to hate each other, but you couldn't see on the court, mate. Like, I've always said this, like, every time I've ever seen Shaq open, Kobe passing the ball and he's got an easy points, mate. Like, meanwhile, same thing at the end of the game. If Shaq knew he was like in foul trouble and Kobe was there for like to take the last shot, he'd always give him the last shot. Like they actually did seem, quite frankly, like they understood how to win, mate. Like they just understood when to give it up. So I agree. The real thing people don't get when they say that thing of like, how many could they have won, is we actually missed the best period, which would have been now. Like if you think about it, right? When they won the first championships, Kobe was just coming on onto the boil and Shaq was like just starting to exit it. Now at this point in this season, he's only just at the end of his prime. He's only like in his last really good seasons. You would have had Kobe at his absolute peak, at the end of the Shaq peak. Now in these years, like 2005, 2006, you really could have won 3-4 more rings here. Because think about it, right? When people brag about Magic and Kareem, that they had what Kobe and Shaq should have had, where you have the ones really dominant at the beginning. So the up-and-comer one knows you sort of give like the old dog the lead at the beginning. And then you just find that transition period, usually your coaching staff helps with this, where you just actually sort of have the intervention and go, look, it's sort of my turn now, give me the keys. And if you do that right, like the Lakers did in the night, that's how you get 5 championships and a billion finals. And I agree with you. The real tragedy people don't get, because obviously they just like the soap opera and they knew they had to break up eventually, is we never actually got to see these two play at their like sort of approximate peaks. And I agree, if you could have put them together, why couldn't they have won this season? Of course they could. Like the real joke of it all is, like, it's why when the nephews try to bag on Kobe, dude, they actually do use these 2 seasons, this and the next one. They go, he got bounced in the first round by the Suns. It's like, look at the team he's playing with, mate. Like the joke is, that's why it actually is tragic that he didn't like, where he almost upset this first round one against the Suns when they didn't have Stoudemire. Because mate, if he'd have actually won that's almost like for real, like 1v5 in the fucking game at that point. That's outrageous, the idea that you are. And if people don't know, in Game 6 of the closeout, he even had 50 when they lost on that one, on like 60% shooting or something, mate. Like, I don't know what more you want someone to do at that point. Like, you're doing everything you can. Like, as I said, you have to understand the premise for the Lakers was they could not win. That was an appalling roster. roster. Like, by definition, like I said, you're in the absolute bottom of the rebuild. But this guy, because he is in his physical prime, it's like he didn't want to hear it. He went for it anyway. It's like, the sad thing about this season, like I say, is like, this is why I hate that narrative approach of sort of like acting like it's a 1v1 spot. Because they do the same thing. I don't know if you know this, mate. Don't look into it. It'll make you so sad if you see it. They try to do this to Michael Jordan, bro. I'm not joking. Nephews do stuff like, who's getting bounced in the first round? It's like, by the fucking 1986 Boston Celtics. Like, and he's averaging like 45 points against him, you mad cunt. Like, you know what I mean? Again, same thing. Like, what is he supposed to do? You do know none of these guys actually are Jesus himself come down from heaven to like do whatever, you know, like they are just fucking human beings playing basketball. Like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's okay. Next topic.
Yeah.
Where do you want to go now?
A couple of details. If people didn't know this, this was also the Kobe, the game, the one where he scored over 80 against the Raptors.
Yes. Like,
this
was
that same season. Yep. The 81 point game. It was that. And also,
the Mavericks one.
Yeah.
It was also the one where he did the 62 in three against the Mavericks as well.
Yeah, like the eventual scoring finals. Numbers in this were just like, you can't even touch that. No, even in the super like ball dom, like you give the ball to, you know, Devin Booker 30, 50 times or whatever. It's like people are almost like trying to force that. It seems like back into the NBA in some ways, but this was Kobe doing it in an era where people are on average scoring like 95 points in a game. Like that's how transcendent these kind of performances were.
Also, like you say, in theory, it's easier to score now. Scoring's inflated, but people still don't do this now, dude. Even when people are bad teams, they don't do this. Like I said, the closest is actually that season when Harden just had all those injuries and basically just had the ultimate green light. And spoiler, he was also taking like 8.5 steps backwards and shooting from the parking lot. You know, and they were like, that's fine, that's fine. He was doing that as well. I will say, by the way, I'll be fair, this was also the season where people like Wade and Kobe abused the fuck out of that rip through on the arms. So you get the free throw. So they also, everyone has rules they abuse. That's true. It's just he didn't have the extra steps back then. But no, like you're saying, basically at this point in time, because there was actually a quote like that from LeBron, which I think made him look stupid as fuck, where he did once say something, Maui, like, if you give me 30 points, 30, 40 shots, I'll have 70, 60. And it's like, you didn't. You're like, literally, by the way, you've actually had playoff series where you never did that. But because that's the sad thing. People just assume everyone's game skills. They don't actually. And I'll tell you the one last thing I'll say on this topic. The really underrated reason, Maui, why most players, even given an ultimate green light, as many shots as they want, will not be able to score like this on anywhere vaguely close to this efficiency. Because I've always said this. First of all, mathematically, Kobe is like slightly above average for efficiency in the NBA. And then when you factor in, he's playing on a shit team and taking all the worst shots, that actually makes him by definition efficient because he's taking very bad shots, but hitting them above the efficiency level you should. What I'll just say is this, is people don't understand how fucking hard it is to physically take 30 basketball shots in a game that aren't layups. Like, the reason why people like Kobe have to be in the weight room for real is because you don't know how tiring it is. Like, when you've taken 20, that's it. If you have a good game, you'd be like, that's it for me. You put me on the bench. Like, when they take that many, to still make them is fucking hard. Like, your arms will gas doing that. It's one of those areas where, unfortunately, it's where in sports, the obvious area where fans always get the disconnect is if they haven't played the sport, they always, like, they think it's video games and you just make your guy run at, like, max speed all the time. It's like, it's real life. Yeah. Like, you get tired. It's like the NFL, mate. The amount of times I watch the NFL, I'm like, you are aware a 300-pound man just crashed into him and we're talking, like, why did he just, you know, sidestep right? Like, what are you talking about? Like, remember, it's very easy to be behind the screen and say that. Like, it's a bit different in real life. So, no, I actually do think this is an example of a season where, like you say, if it's supposed to be easy to score now, then go ahead and do it. Someone do this for me. Show me, like, give me, like, 35 points or, like, 45% shooting and basically just, like, win every game from the perimeter. Like, there's not many people can do that even now, to be fair. So, yeah, I actually think it's credit to him. Great season.
So, next topic I was going to get into is more about something that was like a cultural shift with the season. And another reason I thought this season was hilarious in terms of just kind of the macro aspect of it, which is that this is the dress code season. Basically, like all of the NBA players were dressed like basically rappers. Yep. And they were wearing saggy pants. They were wearing, you know, big chains. They had like crazy hats.
Remember, this is the mid 2000s, like you're saying, this is like the really ridiculous era of, like you're saying, like big swagged out jeans and. Oh, literally, like, all the jokes of, like, the pants are down their ass and everything. Like, oh, literally, unironically, wearing do-rags and stuff to the game. No, back then, everyone was doing, like, an AI, weren't they? It was, like, everyone was popping off like a motherfucker.
Yeah, and I found some really interesting details about it. So first off, what the dress code was no sleeveless shirts, no shorts, no tees, jerseys, sports apparel, no headgear, including headphones, no visible chains, pendants, or medallions, and no sunglasses. And so there was this quote that Jason Richardson had. So if people don't remember him, he was like multi-time dunk contest winner. He was on the Warriors. Yeah. Yeah, when he was doing those, he was on the Warriors, but then he played on the Suns, I think, in this season. And he said, he had this quote that was like, look at what happened with Enron and Martha Stewart. They were dressing a certain way. Dressing a certain way doesn't mean you are that way. And he said, a guy could come in with baggy jeans, a durag, and have a PhD. And a person who comes in with a suit could be a three-time felon. And it was just like, I mean, he was speaking for a lot of people in that, you know, obviously the way you dress and race doesn't really have a big deal with it. Shouldn't be a one-to-one with like someone's criminal record or like what kind of image they're trying to represent. But this is also the season after the Malice in the Palace. So the whole NBA was trying to clean up their entire image and make sure that, you know, people don't look like they're gangsters, right? Coming right off the street or anything like that. But what's hilarious is that everybody thought in this season, all the articles, that this was about Allen Iverson. This was about, because Allen Iverson was dressing like this, and if he's going to be one of the faces of the league, we can't have him dressed like that. But actually, this guy, Dan Patrick, told last year, actually, Dan Patrick revealed that he had a conversation with David Stern before, obviously, David Stern died. That was that David Stern told him in private that actually the dress code rule was because of Steve Nash, because Steve Nash just won MVP. And David Stern said the way that Steve Nash would show up to the
used to wear like football jerseys and stuff, right? Didn't he? Yeah, it's true. Like soccer jerseys and stuff. Yeah, he would look pretty a dad or something, didn't he? Yeah.
If you look at these old pictures of Steve Nash, actually, I get where David Stern's coming from, because he looks so slobby. He was wearing oversized hoodies, jerseys, just like he was actually dressed, and his hair was always just like super sweaty and just wet and just everywhere. So he looked.
He looked like a grunge kid or something. You're right. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. It's true. It was actually looking back at all.
That's actually hilarious, also, because obviously, Steve Nash is like the whitest guy in the whole NBA as well. So like people trying to make it, like they're just trying to keep down hood culture. It's like, actually, apparently, no. And what's funny is that even sounds plausible when you say it. Like, I hadn't thought of that angle, but that is true what you said. He did used to dress really sort of like slovenly, like a gamer almost, or something, you know.
Yeah, you actually, exactly. He does look like he just got finished.
Looks like an esports player,
like 6 hours. Yeah, he does. Exactly. Beyond that, actually, though, there is like some people that are like, when that article came out and when Dan Patrick said that, well, the only reason David Stern probably told you that is because David Stern was actually really good friends with Allen Iverson, too. So it's kind of like one of those things in retrospect, David Stern probably didn't want to say it was Allen Iverson, because over the course of David Stern's life, he actually like, I don't know, he had some really close relationship with AI. But this is also like, if you also look back at some of the pictures, it'd be like forcing NBA players to wear suits and everything like that. Like, there's this is just full of memes where it's just like Tim Duncan with like the most ill-fitting suit of all time, and people just clearly getting things off of like discount racks and just putting it on just so that they can show up to these games. And actually, it's funny, is someone in the D League in the season, I don't remember his name, but he said, like, you know, with our D League salaries, we can't buy suits. So they actually were financially burdening the people in the D League because of this rule, which I just think is like it's just such a random thing, because obviously like the salaries are still to this day not very good in what is now called the G League.
Oh, of course.
But the fact that they were so bad then that you're like, yo, we can't afford suits is just hilarious.
The only thing with that is, though, that is where the NBA could never have foreseen, essentially, I'll just say this, like, the cultural shift. Because essentially, just all this, like, focus on the idea that, like, people's identity is sacrosanct and you can never in any way critique it or criticize. Well, the joke is, if people don't know, I would say the fashion became the worst ever after this era, but not in that way. It wasn't in a hip-hop way. Like, the obvious worst offender ever is your boy Russell Westbrook, wasn't it? Like, mate, he looked like he was like, no joke, Russell Westbrook, every single game, it was like some like fucking secret unlockable character in like Tony Hawk or something, you know, like he had some of the most outrageous outfits I have ever seen from a human being. Like,
it's like the seventh alternate costume on a Soul Calibur.
No,
character.
Some really mad ones. Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah, no, yeah, I actually looked up. So it's, I think it was in, it was when Adam Silver came into the league, he actually immediately just dropped the dress code restrictions. Okay. So I don't think they can still go back to wearing like essentially hood attire.
But no, you but can some of the stuff you're mentioning, like for now. Example, where you're saying there, no sunglasses, no headphones. That everyone has the sunglasses and headphones on now. Jewelry is allowed. Yeah, like to some degree, they have loosened it up a bit. But I will say though, I do notice, like you say, they almost no one has ever gone like almost no one's like with the cornrows and the fucking chain. No one's really gone back to that style. So I almost feel like that's like an unwritten rule. Also, to be fair. Now, actually, the money has scaled up now. Like now the joke is now there's like a million people make $200 million. So, to be fair, now they should also be able to have like swagged out suits and proper fashion and all that shit, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They actually still, what's funny is I looked up the current dress code rules, and it actually was that you're supposed to, if you're a player that's on the bench, like say you're injured or whatever, you're actually supposed to come to the game wearing basically the minimum attire that a coach should wear. But the thing is that actually they don't enforce that rule at all, because I mean, I've been watching Andre Iguodala sit on the bench for the entirety of basically the Warriors' most previous season. The dude is wearing just like also fashionable outfits, like stuff from ready to wear collections from different hot couture fashion designers and things like that. But yeah, I mean, either way, it's just funny that this was the season that also happened, because I think the amount of pictures that came out around this time still lasts to this day in terms of how ridiculous some of the outfits they wore look. But it is funny to look at the season before when Tim Duncan is holding an award and he's wearing jorts. Like, it's just like, it looks so unprofessional, because even though Tim Duncan wasn't obviously like one of the people wearing like more like ghetto culture attire or anything like that, he was still just super sloppy everywhere.
No, people have to remember, Tim Duncan's swag is more like, it's like, it's like Caribbean type swag, isn't it? It's more like the big shorts and the, like, I mean, people know now, you see it now, he's retired, his hair's like fully dreaded now. He's got like he's got like the old woman dreads, if you know what I mean. Like, he doesn't even have like the Bob Marley ones. He has to like really like, don't look well groomed. Even then, he just looks like he's putting the effort in. And if people don't know you, it's actually mad high maintenance to have like a haircut like that. Like, it's actually really like the braids and stuff. You have to do that all the time. Like, so he's just a lazy fucker. You can tell. The joke is his personality is clearly who he is in real life, mate. It's just mad shit. By the way, speaking of which, though, as like I said earlier, this, in my opinion, is like, this is actually towards the end of the Tim Duncan prime. This is like right in the middle still of it. Like, there's still a year or two where he's actually still really, really good. Like, this is when, for me, he was at his absolute best. Like, this guy was a beast at this time. This is when he did, like, actually, he wasn't too unselfish. I can't remember if he was taking less money already, but this is when he was the main guy on the Spurs. Manu's still coming up. He's like starting to peak. Tony Parker's still young. Robinson's gone by now. Like, this is his team fully, and he was still a stud now. Like, because the thing about this Tim Duncan as well was, this Tim Duncan also actually was pretty good still defensively. Like, he would still block the fuck out of a bunch of shots and crowd the paint and stuff. And then this is when, like, the classic Tim Duncan sort of back to the basket, turn around and go off the bank, in off the glass. This is when he had that perfected, mate. Like, that really was like that, like, sort of like 12-foot bank shot, whatever, was like money at this point in time. Like, he was a really consistent player.
Let's just jump into it. I mean, let's just jump into stuff that happened in the playoffs then, because one thing that was...
Because by the way, Spurs could have won the championship this year as well. There's another one of my teams that I would put in that category for sure.
Exactly. Western Conference semifinals, San Antonio and Dallas. The fact that they were facing, actually, is something that they had to make a rule change after this, because if you look at the seeding of this year, it was that for some reason, well, Denver was 40. They had 44 wins and they were the third seed because they were the division champions. Because of
the way the divisions worked,
Yeah, so after this season, because San Antonio met Dallas and both of these teams were 60-plus win teams, they said, okay, we can't have just division champs immediately slotted into the third seed minimum, because if you actually went off of record alone, Denver should have been tied for the eighth seed, and this screwed up the whole bracket. Yep. Like, San Antonio and Dallas, for all intents and purposes, probably should have actually just faced each other in the conference finals, and that in some ways is why this series was probably forgotten by a lot of people, just because, like, it wasn't a conference finals matchup, and it was pretty much in some ways, like the Spurs, I mean, who knows if they would have actually won the championship over Miami. I think they would have really gave them a run for their money.
I would love to see that match, though. It would be mega.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it would have been really good, especially with Duncan covering Shaq instead of the slew of people that they were rotating through for Dallas to try to cover him. But this was one where So yeah, this again, conference semifinals, Dallas win in seven games. This was like watching this one back, like Dirk's athleticism really popped off the page for me at this one. Like,
well, he was in his prime as well at the time for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He was so nimble with taking a couple, one dribble step into the paint, kind of like maneuvering around someone like Duncan, then just laying it up. You watch it and you actually are like, this guy, if you just like had no perspective for how big Dirk was, you could think that this guy is like 6 feet tall. Like, he is sometimes so graceful with the way that he was getting into the paint right there. And it was obvious, like, yes, this was his prime, because you start thinking of like 5 years later when they actually won the championship for the Mavs, and he's taking a lot more jump shots, a lot more with that patented kind of step back the Dirk fadeaway that he goes through to all the time in that kind of year. This was one where he's a lot more lot more mobile, and he was also a pretty good defender too. So this was he falls off a cliff in terms of athleticism later on in his career, but like, he made up for it so much so because he was just so much younger in this one.
Yeah, for me, this is also like one of his absolute prime seasons. Like, his all-round game is mega now. And people will forget as well. This is when, remember, he's a European player. Like, it's European players don't come and be stars in the NBA at this point in time, especially not this way, where you're actually like a dominant player in all respects. And in fact, if people don't know, this was the player also back then, because he's white, that they used to force the Larry Bird comparison, because obviously it's a big white guy that can shoot and actually like is a star player. So back then, that was the main narrative around Dirk Nowitzki. And I'm actually with you as well. Like, I do think as well, people don't know how good this guy was, because like you say, back then he could actually also go to the basket. He had like a really nice game. I also think, by the way, he's another player who actually would be even better in this era. Like, this is a guy where the joke is, bro, you're basically 7 foot and you can play from the perimeter. Like, you can never be guarded on your three-point shot. You should just shoot that every time it's available, bro. Like, you would actually make it. He's another player, if people don't know, who's another 50, 40, 90 type guy who can just do it anytime he wants. Like, this is another player that could actually have been even better, but already was still an extremely good player. Like, this is another true MVP candidate in this season. Like, again, like you're saying, a team won 60 games. His splits are all mega. He's a fucking dominant player. Also, you go look at his team. Here's the thing about the Mavs. They're a really deep team. It's why, actually, by the way, on paper, they probably should have beaten the Heat, actually. I actually think Nowitzki playing like shit in the final did cost them. And then, in general, that team looked like they collapsed when it was the later games in Miami, obviously. But, like, that team probably was the best team in the NBA. Them and the Spurs. It was them, the Spurs, and the Pistons were the three best teams at the time. And then, it depends stylistically. People like the Suns. They're obviously very good as well. The Heat's in there because they've got Shaq and Wade. But these are more like... The funny thing about the Heat is they have more of the Lakers old swag of sort of, like, it's like the two players do it, isn't it? If Shaq and Wade or Shaq and Kobe beat you, then they can win. The Mavs also, people won't realize, they had obviously a couple of years earlier they used to have Steve Nash. Now what they did in this era was you had Dirk was the clear main star, but then the actual like depth of the rest of the lineup's pretty good. Like, if people go and look, we were talking about this before we started. People know when they won that like 2011 championship that Jason Terry like overperformed. If people don't know, he actually legit outplayed LeBron that series. But that was when he was at the end of his career. At this time, he's a really good sidekick, actually. Like, his game's pretty legit. And then the player that sadly is forgotten in history, because for whatever reason he just disappears after this, is the player Josh Howard. Like, that guy was actually a pretty solid fucking player too, like, and was sort of like a guaranteed bucket. So you go look at this squad here. Man, this is a deep squad. It's why actually, like you're saying, when you go look at the playoffs, when you look at the teams, the Spurs, the Suns and the Mavs, man, these are deep teams. Like, these teams have got loads of players that are going to contribute, do points, like matchups. Like, it's why actually I do think, like you say, this, or your friend did, like, this actually is a very deep season. This isn't one where it's like there's one obvious winner and then maybe like one other. Because as you say, like, the joke is, for all we know, the Spurs might have been like the third best team in the whole NBA, and they have to go out second round as though they're like bombs. Yeah. And the joke is to another 60 win team. Like, by the way, if I'm going to go ahead and guess, it's probably why they changed that rule. Surely there's no time ever in history when two 60-win teams met each other in the second round and one of them got bounced. Know. And like you said, get bounced in seven games. And if you ever go and watch, by the way, Tim Duncan's playing great in this series. He's not doing anything wrong. Like, he played awesome this whole season. He just gets bounced second round.
So yeah, the one big slight for Duncan in this series was that in the final overtime of Game 7, he was held to 1-for-7 shooting by DeSagana Diop. And I actually think that this had pretty bad repercussions for the Mavs in a weird way, because to me, actually, the best center that the Mavs had was Eric Dampier, but then they actually started starting this DeSagana Diop when it actually came to the finals, and they tried using him on Shaq. Yep. When I was watching it back, I actually think Dampier was doing like probably a better overall job as a center in terms of offensive production and his defense maybe wasn't quite as good as Diop's, but it's just that, you know, if it's Shaq anyways in some of these moments, like, you're like, you could put any body on him and you're probably not going to get a stop anyways. So probably just get the guy that's just better on the other side of the floor too, which to me was Dampier. So that was kind of a weird moment for me, but either way, no, watching this back though, like, this final game was like, there were moments from Stackhouse had a lot of good contributions too. Jerry Stackhouse, that's another name that I think has gone pretty forgotten, but he was really, really solid from
outside. He was a gunner on this team. Yeah, he was definitely scoring points.
Yeah. He was like really good at just being in the right, like, positioning for me for Stackhouse was a big thing. Like the, like, offensive boards, like doing a lot of the little things, just being an overall hustle guy. Like Stackhouse was really, really solid. So this was also just like a random aside. When I was watching this game, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot Ginobili had hair. And so that was that was like, yeah, they Ginobili had some.
This is when he had the long hair as well, if people don't know. It was like full on. It was like shoulder length or something, wasn't it? Yeah.
I think he had shoulder length a little bit before this one. He had, but it was like, it was clear that he had a full head of hair at this point. Like, I think he did cut it, I think, by this point, but, you know, he was, he was definitely like, it was definitely like a funny look. But, no, I think for this matchup in particular, to me, it had so much intensity compared to when I actually watched some of the finals games. And I was like, it seemed like some of those games just kind of slipped away, but like game seven overtime, it's really hard to beat that. But a couple games in the series were decided by two or less points. Game one was decided by 2 points. Game three was decided by 1 point. Game five was decided by 1 point. And game seven, it took till overtime. So you had four incredibly competitive games in the series. And that, to me, like, this series is probably like, yeah, it's like, if anybody wants to go back and for some reason they just want to see some history, like, for Western Conference semifinals, this is probably, like, I don't know if there's ever going to be a better one than this because of the rule change that had to take place immediately after this. So two 60-win teams can't play each other.
Yes. And also, this is also, like, the era when, because, like, you do play half-court basketball at this point in time, like, when you see a matchup like this, it really is Tim Duncan playing against Dirk Nowitzki. It's not like they just both happen to be on the floor, but both teams are just running up and down, scoring a million points. Like, they actually are playing each other like proper playoff basketball. And by the way, both players perform in this series. The real shame is this, and you'll relate to this because it is a Counter-Strike problem. You know the thing that sucks the most in Counter-Strike? I'll actually use Mouse, who just won Pro League. You know the previous version of Mouse? Everyone always thought I hated them, right? Because what I did hate about them was they would always cause an upset over a bigger team, but then just shit the bed to a team that team probably would beat. And that's unfortunate what I think the Mavericks did in this season. Like, as I said, if the Spurs won that game, game seven, they probably win the championship. Like, I actually think they would have been better than Miami. I think even seeing a better matchup. The difference is the Mavs were awesome all the way to the final, and then they did just collapse completely in the final, including Nowitzki. Like, something really just went wrong with that guy. I don't know what it was. And in fact, the other thing I was going to say actually was, I also think the other reason why Nowitzki would be better in this era is because since back then they were doing that thing, funny enough, just like with Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan, where they were like, look, technically on your skill set, you guys should be power forwards who shoot essentially. But because there are no centers anymore, you're a center because that's just where you're going to be on the floor in terms of positions. The problem with that is if you're in a half court era, that means when you, like you say, when you play someone like Shaq, you're going to have to guard him sometimes. You know what I mean? You're going to have to play defense. It's in a way that, like, actually in the modern day you wouldn't have to. Like, in the modern day, Nowitzki would just get to run up down the floor and take whatever shot he wants. Like, and he'd use dull defense anyway. He would never have to 1v1, like, be on the post against some, you know, it wouldn't be against like Embiid or something, would he? Like, you wouldn't have to do that in this era. In fact, in the modern day, there's the other thing they've learned in the modern day. In the modern day, you do that thing like they actually used to do against specifically Shaq. You just have bodies. You don't even give a fuck how good they are as a defender, like you say. You have people whose job is to take fouls and just not let him get easy layups. That's all you do. You're not really putting your star on him. It's not the 1970s where it's like the center against center. Like, so I actually think, if anything, again, this just shows how good Nowitzki was. He's actually doing it in an era where some of these aspects don't maybe even fit his game. And I actually do think on this team, if you want to go of like superstar theory, who's his second best player? Like, it's not like he's in a duo of like, oh my God, look who he had though. Like I say, he had a deep team, but there was a lot on his shoulders as well to win on this team. Like, it's basically, he had to win if they were going to win in this team. There was no... He didn't have like a Dwayne Wade like Shaq did to come and save his ass, you know?
the way this team is constructed to me is so it kind of screams regular season, because now when I think of how modern NBA teams are constructed, they do want a little bit of depth just so they can obviously like rest their main stars and still pull off some wins through the regular season. But when you actually get down to the nitty gritty, it's like people want a 7.5 man rotation for the playoffs. You know that your stars are going to play, most of them are going to play 29 plus minutes per game, and you just need a couple guys that can sort of shoulder the burden there. And for this Mavs team, like when Jason Terry is your, to me, that he was their definitive second best player. Like, I don't think there's any other case for anybody else. Like Stackhouse was pretty good and everything like that, but like, no, Terry could actually score it, like seemingly at will sometimes. Yeah, yeah. Like Terry was the only, he was the reason that they actually won the first game of the finals. There's a couple little funny things that happened in this conference semifinals game I've kind of went over that I want to just get back to before we move on. And that is, one of which was pretty funny, is that they actually, game six, which the Spurs won, Jason Terry was actually suspended because at the end of game five, he actually threw a punch down on Michael Finley, who like kind of like rammed into Jason Terry in like the waning moments of that game five game. And the funny thing is, when I went and looked back at it, Mark Cuban had this quote of that moment that said, like Michael Finley did a pile driver to Jason's head. And he said, in quotes, if that was a punch that Jason Terry threw, he didn't get his money's worth. It was just gonna, cause like you watch back the replay and it is kind of just like his closed fist just barely kind of like, it does hit him. It definitely is a punch, but it's kind of like his body's on him already. And he's just kind of trying to like, it's your gut reaction sometimes. If a dude lands on your whole body, like you're just going to shove a punch into them. And it's also possibly the reason, I'd say, actually, given that the game was decided by 5 points for game six, Jason Terry not being there was probably a pretty big reason. The Mavs could have easily won the series in six games if Terry's there. But yeah, either way, that's kind of what everything I've got for this series. There's a couple other interesting ones that were happening in these playoffs, but we could just move to the finals because I have a lot of stuff for that.
We can do a couple more teams if you want. Another one I wanted to talk about is, this is actually a tragic season if you're a fan of the Pistons, because this is the season when they win 64 games. Now, we'll see. This is when Larry Brown had gone and that flip guy from the Timberwolves came in, who was like, he was more of like, he's not a legendary coach, but that way, but he still seemed like a good coach. The real problem here is, like I alluded to earlier, if people don't know, I think Mark Cuban famously even said this. He even said that he remembered watching that 2004 finals where the Pistons beat the Lakers. And he said that when I watched that final and I saw how they defended Kobe Bryant, because they did an awesome job on him in that season, he said, I knew there is no way the NBA will allow this to continue. Because essentially, like, that's not what people want to see. They don't want to see like the best player in the world essentially go to the final and get locked down and lose the game. They don't want to see essentially people miss shots, right? It's not what people want to see, sadly, in the modern day. So essentially, like, they did change the NBA enough that, like, the logical team that shouldn't be able to win anymore is the Pistons. But by the way, if they change the fucking rules and you still win the most games in the season, you're just fucking good at basketball. Like, this team was an all-time great call. Like, it's like I've said in the past, I actually think it is tragic, because not only could they have gone back-to-back, they could have won this season too. These, like, three or four seasons in a row, they were just studs, that team. And that's a team, by the way, where we want to talk about roster construction. They don't, like, I'm saying Chauncey Billups the best player. They don't really have any true, like, 1A superstar. That's just like a real, like, that's like the true concept of basketball. It's the team. Like, they have team defense. Like, yeah, they had, like, Chauncey Billups on offense. Yeah, they had Ben Wallace on defense. It's like, they're not even like the most monstrous player on their own, though. It's the way they play as a team. Like, that team was mega. Like, there's another one where, if people don't know, the year earlier was when they had another epic battle with the Heat, which could have been won by the Heat. The Heat versus Pistons these years are mega matchups. They're like both super winnable. The Pistons could have won this one too, by the way. If you ever go and look up to this conference finals, Maui, and just look at the, bear in mind, this is a six game series. Look at the percentages that win. Wade and fucking Shaq are getting in some of these late games in these games. There's one game, dude, where they just both collectively do like 60% from the field on like, you know, 50 points or something. Like, what? Like essentially in this scenario, like, what are you supposed to do as the Pistons? You've done everything you can do. Like, I actually think they're hard done by. This is another season like the Spurs. They could have gone further, mate. They could have been the final themselves.
I think one key player that didn't show up for them as much, well, he was still very good. He was their leading scorer throughout the series, was Richard Hamilton. So Richard Hamilton was the 3-point percentage leader for the regular season. And in this one, I mean, the thing is that his volume was never high. It was like 1.5 1.5, but then he tries to scale it up a little more. And you talk about,
if people don't know, by the way, this team, this starting five might be one of the most unselfish starting fives ever. Like, they really did share all the shots out in this team. Like, it's almost like no one scaled their shots out. Yeah. Like, everyone, for real, their five would really, like you're saying, they'd, I'll have to look the numbers up, but like let's say one player got 16 shots a game, the other one got 14, this one got 30. They all could have, like, done more individually, but, like, that's what I love about this team in a way. Like, they knew their role exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Hamilton's numbers really did, like efficiency-wise, definitely dropped off in this series, even though he was taking quite a few of the shots. And the thing is that I would say, like, when you're talking about, like, 1A, 1B, looking at this team, it kind of, to me, was supposed to be more like Billups, but then, for some reason, Richard Hamilton ended up taking more of the shots in this series, and I don't know if that was, like, his individual choice or what. It's hard for me. I maybe need to, like, look back at, I think it would be probably worthwhile to look back, like, why did Richard Hamilton, like, end up becoming the de facto guy for this team in this series that they lost to the Heat, as opposed to Billups, who to me was supposed to be that guy. But yeah, I like the work that Shaq and Dwayne Wade put in this series was just, like, they were guarded pretty well. They just kind of transcended for a single series, and I don't even think they played as well when I watched them in the finals.
Yeah, so, like I said, if you go for the whole series, they're both averaging over 60%. That's like, how do you beat that, mate? You can't beat that, basically, you know.
Right. It's just impossible. You're playing what's supposed to be, I'd say, the best defense in the entire league at this point in time. So exactly. It's like, they're just hitting everything. Like, you give them, even like jumpers and shots that are like, the amount of times I watched, like, actually Wade in this series, that just kind of, like, he hits like a long two. It's like, in the modern NBA, they want you to take these shots. Like, this is not supposed to be winning basketball. And yet, he's shooting at such a high clip.
No, totally. I'll also say as well, just as a last point on the Pistons, the real problem the Pistons had, there's one player I would actually blame for them not having more than one champion. And it's actually Rasheed Wallace. Because this guy, everyone knows he already had the issues with the techs, that he had a million techs and basically changed the whole fucking NBA. But, like, if people don't know, that's why they made a rule where there was a limit. And after a certain amount of techs, you get suspended and that progressively increases the fine. Yeah. Because when they just used to fine you 10K, he would unironically just be like, I don't care, and just keep getting 10K techs. And, like, that was his version of, like, you know, throwing the ones up in the strip club, basically. Like, he just sort of said, I'm just going to tank it. I don't give a shit. I'm going to get the techs. Well, the problem is, not only was he, like, a divisive figure for the refs, but in the actual team, for real, I think this guy was just lazy. I'll just say it like that. Like, his skill set was phenomenal, dude. If you've ever watched his actual, like, ability, man, he was a very skilled offensive player. He could shoot all sorts of shots. He had a really good mid-range game. Like, this guy actually should have been, like, a Hall of Fame type player, whereas, like, unfortunately, in this team, because they were an unselfish team and it was, like, all about the unit, I always felt like he never, like, always played up to his level. And in some of these series, he was a bit whatever, you know. So for me, he's the one where, like, the others, actually, if anything, some of them are overperforming. Like, Richard Hamilton probably played to his peak level in the Pistons. Rasheed Wallace is just one of those what-if players, sadly. For me, if people don't know, based on the stories, it sounds like he's one of those, like, Kenny S. Shocks type guys who just never put in the work enough, you know, sort of coasted on talent and whatever. I mean, if people don't know it, this is a piece of trivia, but it almost shows what a weird player he is. There's a famous piece of trivia about Rasheed Wallace you might not know, Maui, which is, this is not a joke, he literally played his NBA career in Air Force Ones. Now, the reason why that is funny is because those are not fucking basketball shoes. Like, those are shoes you wear for real to look fly in the hood. Like, the joke is that's what I would wear in the 90s. Like, the fact he actually wear those, like, that's, you're not even trying from a footwear, like, get some proper fucking shoes. Like, that's ridiculous, isn't it? He actually played in Air Force Ones. Like, that's hilarious, so though. It is funny, that's though. So I'll have funny. To say, for the swagger points, he gets bonus swagger points for that, you know?
In terms of the culture and everything and what Rasheed Wallace did, I mean, I love that. Anytime he was being announced in, like, the pregame things, also when his number was retired, actually, in Detroit, the fans, like, it's one of my favorite cheers, I think, of any singular player, is that the entire Detroit arena would just be like, like, it's just, it's such, like, it's almost like how people nowadays do that shoe or whatever, like,
for the Ronaldo one. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. The Ronaldo one. Yeah. But now, which Rasheed, it was just like, that's kind of like the predecessor. I think that one is, in some ways, went so hard. I mean, it was so good. It was so good.
And then, let me think, was there one other angle I wanted to do? Let me think. No, that's about it. Like, I mean, I can give like a couple of other pieces of small trivia, but we'll just go on to the playoffs. Like, for example, one thing I'll tell people that they might not know is, like, for example, bearing in mind in history, the Clippers are just one of the most irrelevant teams ever in history. This was actually a season where they had that guy, Elton Brand, who was actually really good, mate. Like, at the time, it actually looked like if this guy stays, and they actually had a not bad team. They had, like, some decent, like, perimeter player, Cadeno Mobley, Corey Meade. They had some decent players, actually. This was when people really thought, bearing in mind the Lakers were, like, sort of off the boil, people really thought maybe the Clippers is going to become good, but sadly that Elton Brand guy sort of like, I think he got injured maybe like a season later. Okay, he's in all those players. That's the other tragic thing actually about the 2000s when I go back and look now. Dude, there are so many what if players. Like you said it earlier, mate, Jason Richardson was a stud. If people don't know, he could shoot the three ball and he was a fucking mega athletic going to the basket player. He had some outrageous dunks. As you say, he was a dunk contest. When he actually did, if people don't know, the like under the legs one where he did like one of the first ones
to do that. He's the first person to do that.
He's phenomenal, yeah. So, but he's another one of those players where like they had like an all right career, but no fan now is going to know them. They've forgotten the history. Same as another guy I'll give you is, I can't remember, I think at this point in time, I don't know if he'd gone to the Hawks yet. Obviously, like Joe Johnson, obviously, this is where he was still around at this point. You said earlier, Yao Ming, people forget that. Yao Ming was the fucking stud. This guy was like a real, by the way, one thing very underrated about Yao Ming, what a good shooter for a fucking mega tall guy. Yes. Like really nice game.
Range.
His problem, his problem is an obvious one that's plagued a lot of tall people, which is essentially, even though being tall is the ultimate advantage in basketball, the problem is humans essentially, if you don't know like physiology, aren't supposed to be that tall. Like it puts too much weight on like your joints and your feet. And so unfortunately with him, he just had like permanent like feet injuries all the time. And like, if you ever go and look, it's rare that he ever like played, you know, like all this regular season. He had to miss a few playoff seasons as well. And he's just, and also I've heard as well, the other downside he had was, because this is when, because of him, the NBA was starting to pop off in China. Supposedly, they used to work this guy so hard in the summers. Like he would play the whole NBA season, then come back and play like, you know, all the exhibitions and internationals and camps. And so I've heard essentially they just worked this guy. I think they burned him out, mate, because people won't know again. Like he's just like sort of a name people vaguely know. This guy, he had real potential to be like an all-time great again. Like this was, I mean, I think he is in the Hall of Fame now, but this at the time, he was really one of the best players in the NBA. He was a very good player for sure.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely gets forgotten in terms of, like, great centers, actually, but it's just kind of one of those injury play career. Like, longevity definitely probably held him back, or the lack thereof of it. Yeah. Otherwise, like, in a lot of ways, I mean, the Yao Ming effect was kind of, like, it definitely coincided with China popping off and everything, and I think that, I don't know if there was any, like, there's obviously been players that have done really well in terms of their mass appeal in China. Like Derrick Rose is still to this day, like, one of the most popular people, it seems like, in China. Okay. Kobe was obviously off the charts there, too. But, like, I think Yao definitely was, like, hugely responsible for the fact that it's like, okay, we actually, like, China was like, okay, he's our guy. Like, we finally got a guy over there, and he's actually really good, too. So,
because by the way, one thing I want people to understand is, like, they'll know now, the modern day players, because they know now that you're allowed to be an international player really good. Like, they didn't make him an all-star as like a media move because he's like, you know, because China and that. No, he actually was a real all-star level player, guys. Like, he actually was that good.
All NBA third team. All NBA third team in that season. Yeah. I mean, he was legitimately very good. I mean, he was bouncing between all NBA second team and third team for a lot of his career, or at least the ones that he was able to play. But it's just that he only played, what, 9 seasons in the league? And he was an all-star 8 times. I mean, like, no, 5 times on all NBA teams, 8-time all-star. Like, you know, he was absolutely legit. There's no
That's why the real tragedy is that him and Tracy McGrady got paired together, because they're both two players notoriously injury prone. Like, the joke is, if you ever go and look, it's like they take turns which playoffs they play, mate. Like, right, I'll play this year, right, it's your turn. Like, give me a break. Like, if they ever could have actually played together the whole time with no injuries, there's another what if. Like, think how good the West could have been then with the fucking Rockets in the mix as well. Think about, we've just gone down the Spurs, the fucking Suns, the Mavs. Eventually, you're going to get the Lakers back eventually, because they've got the best player. Like this, the Rockets is one of the ultimate hit and miss teams, mate. They could have done something, but tragically didn't. Because, by the way, along the similar lines, this is also a season when Tracy McGrady's still good, mate. Like, I actually think people don't know that isn't hype when you read interviews and people like back in the day used to be literally comparing. It was fucking Tracy McGrady and Kobe was the original one in the early 2000s, and then after that, people used, I think Kobe even used to say he thought Tracy McGrady was like the hardest player to guard or something. Like, if people don't know, Tracy McGrady was a fucking stud, mate. This guy also won a mega skill set. Another player, by the way, he would be so huge now if he existed in the social media age, because not only was his game mega from three, but also he has like the Kevin Durant body type where like you cannot block his shot, mate. He's too tall, a little too lanky. And then lastly, He does all the highlight moves. He would be so huge in like the social media era of like clips. Because I always think the thing people don't get now is you had to explicitly sit and watch SportsCenter and hope that highlight came on to see it in this sort of era. Like the internet's still burgeoning. Like in the modern day, the joke is you don't even have to watch the game. You just scroll Twitter and you'll see the best player. Like you'll see some Luka player, some York. There's even people who don't follow the NBA know these people roughly or know that they hit some game winner or something. Like I think that's one of the areas where when people talk about social media, that's the area I want to see the stars. It's like imagine like Kobe's 81 point game today with social media. Mate, yeah, it would be like 100 times bigger, wouldn't it? Like the joke. Because by the time he'd even gotten to 60, everyone in the world would have tuned into the game. Because that game explicitly, we'll make this the point that we'll go to the finals thing. The reason that game's a great example of how different the world was is that's just a regular season game against the Raptors in January. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't like the NBA finals. So unfortunately, even though now every fucker's going to do that thing they do, dude. Well, you know, like there's a famous concept that everyone alive in the 60s claims they were at Woodstock. But if you ever look, like it's impossible. Like there's too many, like it's like 7 million people claiming it. It's the same thing. Everyone claims they watched this game live. It's like, you didn't, you fucking liar. Dude, the Raptors sucked at this time. There's no way you watched a fucking like Lakers home game against the Raptors on like the 22nd of January or whatever. Like, you didn't. There's no one did. Although I will tell you one piece of trivia that if it's not a lie, is insane, which is Kobe Bryant claims this is the only game in his entire life that his grandma came to the game. The game he scored 81 points.
Yeah.
If that's true, that's poetic. That's movie shit, isn't it? Like, sadly, I will say this. I'm just so legit, Maui. Even if I like a player, does sound a bit like bullshit. I will just say that. You know what I mean? That sounds like in real life, you're trying to write the movie script, you know, make it a bit better. Like, I don't know. All I'm saying, Kobe, is I want that lie detector on that one if you're alive. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you passed that one, mate. I don't know.
I mean, the best lie detector moment of this whole 81-point game is I think it was LeBron had an interview where they asked him about
this,
like, what
he thought of it. This is so outrageous, isn't it? It's so egregious. Go on, tell me. Hit me.
He was like, he was saying that he was sitting with his friends and he said, tonight I think Kobe's going to go for 80 or something.
I think he said 70, which is even almost as egregious. Exactly. If people don't know, like, aside from, like, if people don't know, even Michael Jordan's career high is 69. Like, basically, the people who got 70 is like Wilt Chamberlain, I think like David Thompson once or something, right? Like, and maybe Kareem had like one or something, you know. Like, the idea, like, again, this is what a liar LeBron is. If people don't know, LeBron is a habitual liar, by the way. Because the weird thing about him as well, dude, is he does it in a way that only really famous people do, where it's like a really unnecessary lie, like you say. Like, on that one, all you have to say is, like, I was a big fan of Kobe. I used to watch a lot of his games. And I thought, oh, maybe he could go off in this one. But as you said, he actually just goes, I even told him before the game starts, I think he's going to get 70. I don't know why. I just have a feeling. It's like, shut the fuck up. You didn't. No, there's no way you said that, you actual liar. Like, bro, why? It's so unnecessary as a lie as well, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's like the ones, like the worst one ever, I still think, without making this a whole How LeBron Lies segment, because there's a lot of good ones. But one of my favorite ones ever, because it's so, again, it's so unnecessary, bro, is the one where he just lied and said he was a big fan of the Godfather movies. Right, Maui. Godfather 1 and 2, probably two of the most quotable films ever in history, right? Think about it, you know, maybe an offer, I can't refuse. You come to me on the day of my daughter's, you know, like, I offer you nothing. So like every, and when they, you might know this, when they in the press conference said to him, well, what's your favorite line from the movie? He goes, no joke, well, there's just so many, isn't there? You know, there's so many. And then they go, no, but you know, like, just give us one. And he can't come up with one. Because he obviously hasn't watched the movies. Dude,
right.
This is why I just bring it up as a joke. I don't get what he's doing. Like, why? Like, what are you actually gaining from a weird lie about watching a movie? You know, like, I don't even know why he does it, dude. Because to me, it's like, yeah, you can have all the same upside, but without looking silly to someone who fact checks it in a way. Like, that. In fact, that's the thing I would say. LeBron almost acts like one of those politicians from the 80s where there wasn't the internet and you could just say whatever you want in real life. And, you know, like, unless someone in real life knew that stat, they can't contradict you. It's like, bro, this is all being recorded. Like, if you don't know, the reason I even know that story, like, you know about this story, is because people just bring this up later as, like, evidence to, like, if people don't know, all the LeBron haters have, like, a dossier with all this shit, and I'm like, every time he had the book, every time he was on page one of those books.
No, I was going to say, I was
he's egregious as fucking he. That's why, in the funny thing is, I can just keep it on a comedy level. I don't have to hate him as a basketball player, but, like, the full spectrum approach to unnecessary lying is so bizarre to me, man. I don't get it. It is funny, though. It does make me laugh. It makes me laugh.
LeBron had Malcolm X's autobiography over the course of like 2 years.
And it was always on page one. He was always... And even worse, dude, it was like that thing where he's not even... This is how you know he doesn't read. He's not even smart enough. You know, if you ever like got a book for a book report and you didn't read it, You don't just turn it back in like all crisp. Like that. You obviously like ruffle all the pages. Your thumb like he just left it all like except for like page one, which is bent like that. The rest of the book is like perfect shelf quality. You know what I mean? Like you can even see like you've never even cracked those pages, bro. Like you are because you are so egregiously lying now. And like you say, months later, it's still on page one. Like just skip to page 10 or something. If you're lying, you idiot. Like you're not even good at lying. That's the worst part about this.
Just open it to the middle. It just looks better anyway.
Exactly.
It's so unnecessary. I will say, okay, actually, I
look, oh, and I'll just say this is a final thing. Yeah. The obvious thing as well I'll say is this, LeBron. Have you ever heard of Cliff's Notes, you idiot? You don't have to actually read the book. Just go read, in fact, go on Wikipedia, just read the premise of the book. Then when they ask you a question, you can at least fake it. You know what I mean? It's so silly.
No, I actually, okay, so but to give LeBron some credit, I look back at actually a lot of what he did this season, and this is when he was just seriously unstoppable. Like he was so good at just dribble penetrating, and it's just that people bounced off of him like he's a bull in a china shop. Like he was literally just running through people in all everything he did this season. It was so obvious that he was just one of the like the most transcendent players in this season. Like him and Kobe, you when you watch back what they were both accomplishing in this season, it was like, okay, how is the rest of the league not just bowing down to these two guys? Because the what they were doing in terms of Kobe's finesse, footwork, in terms of like the way he's able to beat people off the dribble with just like some handle here and there, and just like all of the whole arsenal and bag of moves Kobe had down for sure. LeBron literally did not need that this season. He was seriously like, if he was charging with any momentum whatsoever, there was no person in the league that could seemingly stop this guy. And that's why it felt so easy also to criticize how LeBron wasn't able to actually like carry his teams even further, just because it just feels like you see him in the regular season being able to do everything, and then just the like I guess like big moment passing and everything, and it's like there is a case for making the right play for someone like LeBron there, but it's also like, come on, just like we know you have the physical gifts, like you're more in terms of genetics, I don't think there is a single person that is more genetically gifted in this season than LeBron James. Like he's just on another level in terms of athleticism. He's like a running back just like barreling through everybody in this, and like you have to tackle him to stop him. So but other than that, I mean, yeah, we can move on. We can move on from this topic.
I'll just give you a quick thought on that, though, which is that I actually agree that if people don't know, this is actually why the whole LeBron topic is so annoying. Because what people don't know is there are certain areas where his career is very unique. Like, basically, LeBron has never, ever been bad in the NBA ever for 1 second in his whole life. Like, the second he came in as an 18-year-old, he was already really good for an 18-year-old. And then, like you say, in this season, I mean, he's only like 21 at this point in time. This is when he's like actually like his most ball dominant. Like, he's taking all the shots. He's really good, though. Like you say, he can essentially at will go to the basket anytime he wants. Like now his mid-range game, it's not developed now, but obviously back then it was a bit raw. It didn't matter. If he got, like you said, if he got up ahead of steam, it was going to literally be a foul, or he was definitely just getting to the basket. And so he could score at will. And on his team, he obviously had some pretty shit. They weren't very good, those Cavaliers. Like look, the GM wasn't bad. Like as, in terms of rounded teams, they were all right. But in terms of like other names, he has barely anyone helping him. So yeah, he is doing a lot of it on his own. But yeah, the real problem with this is why LeBron's career has been so tortured. Because I agree, in terms of raw athleticism, it's probably like one of the five most athletically gifted players ever in basketball, mate. Like the joke is, aside from that, you're talking about like, you know, fucking Michael Jordan, like Wilt Chamberlain, the most outrageous players ever. Like he's up there for sure. Because I agree with you. The joke is, people have often said this, but I actually agree with it. The actual sport LeBron should have played is American football. Like, logically to me, in the modern day, when I watch him play, he would just be like Gronkowski or something, mate. He would just be like Travis Kelce. He would just be some enormous tight end who's really fast and athletic, and you would not be able to cover them. They would just get touchdowns whenever they felt like it, and they would be the dream player for any quarterback to play with. So, like, if anything, like, the joke is in basketball, like, he was doing football moves in basketball, like you say, like, his speed was unbelievable. Because the thing I think is really underrated about him, by the way, is people don't get this. They see the speed, but they don't understand. He was like 250 pounds or something, guys. Like, that's the part that's inconceivable. That's why the football analogy is a good one. Because in football, you get that. You don't just get a guy who's fat. You get like a guy who's really strong, muscular, and fast. It's like, good luck tackling that fucking guy. Like, the joke is you hurt yourself tackling people like that. Like, that's why he was unstoppable, because he had that quality as well, where it's like, right, which do you choose? Do you put a small guy on him who's fast enough to keep up with him, but they can't stop him getting the basket? Or do you put the big guy on him who could physically stop him, but he can go around them? It's like, brilliant. So like, pick your poison. You're going to get you either way on that one. Like, the real sad thing about LeBron in some ways is I actually think if I could redo his career, I would do it completely differently. I would actually have him start off like Kobe style as like a sidekick to someone while he's like learning the, you know, how to be a leader, how to be the clutch player. I think if he'd have done that, he would have had a lot more success. The problem is he started essentially like the Michael Jordan style. You start the hardest possible way. You just go to a shit team with no other talents, nobody like true, like all NBA type player. Like, and essentially you just have to ball out completely and you're still not going to win for a bunch of seasons. Like, that's really hard. Like, what people don't know is I hate on LeBron when people overrated him later. This era, I actually had a lot of sympathy for him. I actually think he was in a really tough spot and he was doing about all he could. I mean, if you notice, I'm only ever hating on by comparing the players I think are better. Individually, he was a phenomenal player. I agree with you as well. I think athletically, unbelievable. Like, again, if this was like NBA and I make a character before we play, if I make one with LeBron James's like stats at this point, you'd just be like, well, that's unfair, isn't it? You've just maxed out all the stats for like all like the speed or whatever, haven't you, and the strength. Like, it'd be unfair to play against, wouldn't it? I'm with you on that. By the way, that's also why we needed to do that. To be fair, it would be mad if we actually never even mentioned LeBron in the whole season.
Yeah, we've been through all the people on the All NBA team. If we just kind of skipped him, it would have been a bit of a shame. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you look at all the people that are like on even or everybody that's on the first, second, and third team, and the people that had to me the best genetic gifts were LeBron and Shaq. Like Shaq's tools are just completely different than anybody else ever. You know, he's just so much bigger, so much stronger than everybody else. Also, was All NBA first team in this one and. I think this is a good time to probably segue into the finals.
Yes, do it.
For this. Yeah, so obviously this was the Heat versus the Mavericks, the Heat getting off of the victory in six games versus Detroit. And then obviously we already talked about Dallas. Well, we talked about their conference semifinals games, but they took out the Phoenix Suns in six games also. But this was a...
And by the way, as an aside, there was a game, yeah. I think it was like game six or something, where Dirk Nowitzki has 50 points against the Suns, and that is a banger
yes.
game. If you ever go watch this, he absolutely goes off on this one's mega.
So going into the series, I'm fairly confident that the Vegas odds were in favor of the Mavericks. I know the preseason odds actually had the Heat as bigger favorites, but off of the victory versus the Suns and the Spurs, I think the odds started ramping up for the Mavericks for this one to win it. But then we kind of have to bring up the fact that, yeah, this was not necessarily the best series for Nowitzki. I mean, Nowitzki was still really good in this one, but I actually think like the biggest... Like, I actually think there was, in some ways, was an out-coaching. Because when I actually, like, dove into some of the lineups and, like, who was performing at what levels for this one, to me, one of the biggest glaring errors for what the coach of the Mavs was doing was that they actually swapped their starting lineup after Game 3. So the Mavs were actually up 2-1 in the series, and then they actually swapped out Adrian Griffin that was starting for them, and then Avery Johnson put back in the second-year point guard in Devin Harris. And if you actually look at like all the numbers and output, Devin Harris is just worse. He's just worse than Adrian Griffin, and he's smaller than Adrian Griffin. Adrian Griffin was like kind of like in some ways supposed to be the secret weapon. When I looked like the game one preview on ESPN, they were talking about like, oh, actually like minutes before the matchup, the Heat actually found out that based off of the submitted starting lineups that it was going to be Adrian Griffin, which caught them off by surprise. And Adrian Griffin played pretty well overall in this series. He's kind of like nobody talks about him because he's like the fifth best player in the starting lineup for the Mavs. But in some ways, he was a better matchup for Dwayne Wade. He actually seemed like he was actually defending him a little bit better. But there's like kind of like another issue with this whole thing, which is that Wade's performances in the first couple of games weren't very good in the series, but he was coming off of the back of, I think it was like a nasal infection or like kind of like a sinus infection that he had. Some people called it a flu, but I mean, I think someone actually said it was like a sinus problem he was having. And then his performance took off and it coincided with one, the starting lineup changing for the Mavericks, and two, the fact that he probably just recovered.
Yeah, the few things I would say about this is, one, I actually do think the Mavs correctly were the favorite team. On paper, they should have won. And obviously, as you say, if you look at the first three games, they should win all day long this series. Like, this actually is, even though, look, I'll give them credit, the Heat actually plays way more clutch than the last few. They get performances from people like Alonzo Mourning, famously with, like, fuck all minutes. It's just get loads of blocks and, like, crazy shit like that. They had some, like, clutch performances. But when you consider that, like, actually in this finals, Shaq is mad quiet. If people don't know, he averages 13 points. In a couple of the games, he is actually just like dying. Like, there's some games where he's just not Shaq, which isn't the case before. Like I said, this is a season where he could have been the MVP. He was mega the year before. This is actually when I started to see some sort of mortality from him. But the point is, not only did Wade in those last four games go ham, mate, the refs just like were his fucking best friend in this one. Like, because as I say, unfortunately, this is when they've intentionally made the defensive side of the ball harder, and this guy knew how to abuse it, because with his slashing style, he either gets to the basket or he gets the free throws, and all, and the amount of free throws he takes in some of these latter games is fucking mental, mate. Like, because a couple of them, there's a couple of famous ones on YouTube, you can go and look, there are a couple, dude, that are for real phantom fouls. Like, there's one at the end of a game where I'm telling you, you can slow it down, the guy doesn't touch him, but it's like a foul, free throws, and he's another one of those players where, like, he's going to hit, like, I don't know, 85% of his free throws. So if you give someone like that direct access to the basket at all times on free throws, they're going to drop 30-point games on you. But even with all that said, as much as I can put all that in, this still was one of the most bonkers finals runs from any, like, young player. I will say, people always forget one thing about Dwayne Wade, which goes like this. They always forget, like, LeBron is the peer of Wade because they're in the same draft class. Wade did a full college and everything before he came here. Like, he actually is, well, that's why he was more tenured and more well-rounded like this. Like, LeBron's 18 at the time he came to the NBA. I think Dwayne was already 21 or something. So, like, this is actually, Dwayne Wade, funny enough, actually has one of the last real old-school careers where you do college for the full time, then you come after a few years and you're already ready to be a professional. You come into the league and you can already start contributing. So, like, this was one of the best, like, young player finals performances, even with all the ref shit. Like, he still does just smirk for this fucking finals. He's fucking bonkers. And in those last few games especially, he was, for really was doing Jordan type shit. Like, you would see them be in a position where it's like they're down 2 points or the other team's making a late run, and every time you need a basket or free throws, he gets it. He just, every time. And so that's why I actually think the funny thing is, all the nephews, if anything, underrate Dwayne Wade, because they remember either, like, oh, wasn't he like the sidekick to LeBron, which already triggers me, but whatever, we'll leave that to the side. But the other thing is, they don't know, like, in the early years, especially before his injuries, he was real beast. Like, at this point, when he won this ring, people were thinking, fucking hell, if he's won a ring already, like, 3 years in, 2 years in, dude, he's going to be like a, they thought for, like, in paper, he was supposed to have, like, a Kobe-type trajectory and become, like, you know, like a top 10 player of all time, if anything. So, it's like I say, I'm weighed up all. Like, I can say the refs are bullshit, but at the end of the day, you still have to put the ball in the basket. You still have to make the free throws, you know?
Yeah, there was a bit of tension with this series and the aftermath of it, that people thought that the Mavs got cheated because of the refs. And if you actually do watch back the end of game six, there's this moment where Wade kind of just dribbles right into Dirk Nowitzki on, like, the left side wing, and it's just like there's nothing Dirk could even do, and then they give Wade free throws. Yeah. So there are these pretty suspect moments throughout the series that make you do believe, like, something could be amiss here. And the fact that the betting odds, I verified it. I looked at this website that's like sports odds history. It was, the Mavs were predicted to win 4-2, apparently, by Vegas odds. So yeah, they were supposed to win this one, and then, like Wade's performance in this definitely lifted him into, in a lot of ways, kind of like all-time great status. Like, you have to talk about him when you talk about greatest shooting guards and things like that. You know, obviously we've talked about him in our GOAT episode before, where we're not really actually going to put him in, like, the top two. I probably wouldn't put him top three either or anything like that, but he was the one that overperformed here, because it was Shaq that was under-delivering. They tried just a multitude of defenses on Shaq. He was still, very damn good. Like, it was still really hard to, like, mess with him. And when Miami ran the offense through him, he made a lot of really great decisions. Like, he was really good at just, like, setting up low block, and then just, if he gets the ball but there's a double coverage on him, he's just going to pass the ball out, and then they just pass Shaq the ball again, and usually the second defender had sagged off him by that point, and then he just kind of goes up. He, like, nobody could really stop him one-on-one, but the Mavs had actually had a pretty good system defense to deal with him as much as they could have.
Here's the problem, though, Maui. This is a stat and a half. Shaquille O'Neal in the finals shot 29% from free throws.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there were a moment, I think he had like a 7 free throw in a row.
He had like a drought or something. Yeah, exactly. So if people don't know, it's actually also really important for Shaq's legacy, by the way, that Dwayne Wade won this finals for him. Because I'll tell you what, that whole thing where everyone was laughing at Kobe when he did, like, Shaq won the extra ring. I remember just being like, did you watch that finals? What are you talking about? Like, bro, he was the joke is, Shaq was more of a sidekick here than fucking Kobe ever was to him. What the hell are you talking about? You know, in the second ring, Kobe has like 29 points averaged in the playoffs. It's like, this was like one where it's like the finals was sus, because like I said, before that he was great. The other one to me as well is, even though I'll give credit to like the clutch aspect of the Heat, everything goes wrong for the Mavs in this series. Like, for example, in game five, Gary Payton, who's washed at this point in time, hits the game winner. Like a fucking game winner late in the game. Like, that means that's basically supposed to be your game. I don't think people understand this, right? Not only is it rare that, like, the best players in the NBA hit game winners, like, even the best players hit the odd one. Like, the idea, like, a washed old great player wins you a game in the finals of the NBA in game five when it's 2-2. Like, that's just God telling you you're supposed to win this ring, mate. And then the other one I'd say as well is, just go and look at the shooting percentages for the starters of the Mavs in this finals. Oh, it's depressing, bro. Most of them just collapse. Like, the game just falls apart. Like, think about all the people we've been talking about. Like, the Josh Howard guy, just whatever. Stackhouse falls off a cliff. Dirk himself he's still a really good player, to be real. He was a mega player, but even he's not as good, and he definitely faded as the games went on. Another thing about Dirk that killed me in this finals, by the way, is, bearing in mind, like I say, if you're someone like Kobe and Wade, this is the best era ever to get free throws anytime you want them. That, because Dirk was trying to play a finesse game and he would not play like on the block, he could have had free throws all game long, and he just essentially didn't play into that. It's why people hated on him the next year against the Warriors. When you put him in a hard spot, Dirk would just choose to shoot the shot, and he wouldn't sort of like force it, as it were. In some ways, I almost think, like, look, here's what's hard about that. In a way, I actually think that's honourable in a way. Like, I actually think when you abuse rules like that and you're not really being fouled, but you get the free... In a way, you're sort of just cheating and like... That's like the Olof boost. It's like, I wouldn't do it, but I won't hate you if you do it, because it is legal. So my problem is, like, if you actually want to win the game, you probably should like use everything cheap like that. But at the same time, I also hate that that existed. Like, when I actually knew those players were intentionally ripping through, that does, like, that's shit. It's supposed to be that you were taking a real shot and you got fouled. I can handle that if you have free throws. So that's one thing I did hate about this finals, though, is like, one, free throws were very decisive for the Heat. And then secondly, I like it when you just, like, when we were talking about the Mavs run where they play the Suns, it's mega, they play the Spurs. I like it when it's a heavyweight boxing match. We both do, like, our best shots, and then the winner wins. I hate it when it's, like, one person, like, buckles at the end, you know, which, like, the Mavs at the end sort of just gave up the ghost on this one is the bomber, unfortunately.
Yeah, like...
Because this could have been a ring for real, like we're saying. Like, this could have been a ring already. And by the way, imagine how that would change the NBA if Dirk Nowitzki has a ring in 2006. Ooh, that's interesting, because I'll tell you what, I always thought, as a random aside, let's see what you do with this, I actually always thought throughout his career, funny enough, as soon as Steve Nash left, I actually think Dirk Nowitzki, it's weird that Cubans always gets all this praise as an owner, because he actually did a pretty bad job attracting talent to Dallas, mate. Like, I don't know if you know this, but they would, every offseason, they would always hype the fact that in Dallas and Texas, it's like they have like no income tax or something, right? Isn't it like it's income tax free or something weird?
Yes,
so basically, if people don't know, it actually means, by definition, a max contract for the Mavericks or the Rockets should be worth way more than for, like, the Lakers or something, where you're in LA with, like, California tax. But bizarrely, they never could get the big names to go there. Like, when Dirk was there, they would only ever get you, like, if you were good, like, if you were, like, Jason Kidd, like, at the end of your career or at the beginning, like, none of the stars would ever come. Because I always thought, if you'd have just put another bona fide star, like, let's say, like, an amazing point guard or a shooting guard or something with Dirk, you could have stacked a bunch of rings, mate. You needed another. He needed more help, in my opinion.
Yeah, the free throw discrepancy, though, in this one was, like, so egregious, where Dwayne Wade was averaging over 16 free throws a game in this, by the way. Like, no one was even coming close to that on the Mavericks.
Oh, mate, this is mental. I looked this up. He took 97 free throws over six games.
Yeah.
Like, 97, Dirk, in comparison, took 55.
Yes.
And exactly. He's 7 foot tall. Like, he should be getting fouled all the time, you know, like.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think, one of the games that Dwayne Wade had in this, the only, like, he got 25 free throw attempts. The only person that ever got more free throw attempts in a game was Shaq. Shaq got more free throw attempts. So,
and that'll have been like a Shaq or some stupid attempt, exactly.
It was when he was on the Lakers, yeah.
No, that's what I mean. So it'll be a game where the other team just intentionally fouled him over, like, they wanted the fouls at that point, you know.
Yeah, and that's why this series, like, was kind of weird to watch it sometimes, because it really did feel like the whistle that Dwayne Wade was getting in this was so ridiculously one-sided that it was almost like that's why I do get why some people could have thought that this one was rigged. But I don't, I mean, I don't really, I mean,
oh, no, mate, I've just looked it up. To tie it all in, the real problem is the game five. That's the one you're talking about. It's the one where Peyton hits the game winner in a game in which Dwayne Wade has made 21 out of 25 free throws. But his actual game from the floor is dog shit. He's gone 11 out of 28. Like, if anything, like, at the end of the day, Maui, if I tell you, right, their best player is going to miss 17 shots, you're like, cool, we might have a chance. Like, no, apparently not. Like, everything else in the universe is going to conspire that we won't win this game. Like, what were we supposed to do at that point? Because that's also, by the way, one thing I do hate about the NBA in the era where they made the rules too bad for defense. It's the most bomber game of all time is when you see on the headline on ESPN, like, you know, so-and-so drops 42 points. You go, oh, shit. You go to the box score and they made like 20 free throws. You're like, who gives a shit then? Like, I don't want to watch, I'm not watching a free throw contest. I'm like, I want to see him actually do basketball moves, not just unguarded do that over and over again. Like,
I think that's in some ways probably why, like, the nephew opinion of Dwayne Wade hasn't really aged that well, because when you do look back at some of what he was doing in this series, a lot of it is, it's just slashing, and it's like, I mean, his, I'll say this, I mean, I was kind of talking before about, like, what does Dwayne Wade do better than Kobe? I mean, he attacks the basket very quick. Like, his first step is crazy fast. Like, it's one of those things where,
oh, it's mega. People don't know, he was one of the first players really early on who had that amazing Euro step. Like, in an era when no one else was doing it. In fact, at the time, they even, like I said, would sometimes call it as a travel. Like, his first step, because he's so fast anyway, he was one of the best to adapt to that, bro. He was really good at that. Like, his ability to move through that paint was sick, mate. It was so good.
Yeah, his balance was very, very impressive, too. Like, I mean, I was really impressed by Dirk in the Spurs series about the way he was able to navigate through some of those defenders. Like, I mean, Dwayne Wade is actually doing it every single play. Yes. Like, he can do it so consistently, whereas with Dirk, it's like once per quarter he'll pull it off, and it's like, holy shit, you can move like that. But then it's like, you know, it's not like he's doing that in a replicable
fashion. Yeah, if people don't know, even Dirk could actually do the Euro step, like you're saying. He could sort of, because if people don't know, this is another thing we'll do on this show, kind of like I do with all my shows. I try and explain what I see as the principles of basketball. If people don't know, the reason why the Euro step is an OP move is because if you do it correctly, the defender can't really sort of tell which direction you go when you do it. So if you do it right, as you see when, like, James Harden and Dwayne Wade did it in their prime, it looks like you just move through treacle around the guy. You know what I mean? It looks like the guy just stays still and you just step around him, because essentially you do the step in a way where it's like he doesn't know you're doing a Euro. He doesn't know you're going to, like, extend the step really far. So if you do it right, like you're saying, Dirk could do it as a way to go directly to the basket. Like, he could, instead of posting up and doing a move, you just go past the guy with two steps and you just laying it up at that point in time, which, by the way, for a 7 foot is sick. Like, it looks like the easiest points you're ever going to get when you do that.
Yeah. I mean, seeing people do it in person is just like, it does make everybody else around them.
That's amazing,
like,
isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
It's do you know really another thing as well, as a random aside? I don't know if you've ever seen this, but in the 2000s, and they sometimes do this every now and then on productions in the modern day, they would sometimes experiment by doing a courtside shot on the side. Bro, this is how basketball should be shown. You know this because you've been to a live game. If you see the traditional one, the reason the traditional one works and I like it is because I've seen that angle my whole life, so I know, will the ball go in? Is that a good shot? But you don't appreciate what the perimeter players do if you do that. If you see, like, what a Kevin Durant or a Steph Curry does when they're and you're on the side of the court, or Kobe or whatever, when they do, like, the amazing two-point shot or the move around people, it looks so sick from the side in a way it doesn't from above, you know. Like, from above, it's way harder to judge. Like, but the, like you're saying, if someone does, like, those, like the ones where they're dancing and fucking making the defender go in and out, then they spin around and do the fadeaway, it's so good from the side. Like, that, I actually think that's how you should show basketball, which makes it look way more impressive.
Yeah, this is also just like a tangent. Like, there was a time, I think maybe a few years ago, where the NBA, they might even still do it, they called it the Phantom Cam, where they would actually show the side shot, like kind of like a ground level shot with like really high frame rate, and then they would slow-mo it so you could see like what a perimeter player, all of his moves and everything like that. But they would do all these replays on broadcasts where they would show the Phantom Cam, and it was like, yeah, super high frame. They were basically just showing off they had a high frame rate.
Oh, right, like 4K or some shit, right, okay.
And they were slowing it down for no reason, in my opinion. Right. Because if they just showed that in full speed, with a high frame rate, it would be actually much more appreciable for how athletic these people are. Because, like, you would see where it was really fun, where if it was someone with a really sick handle like Steph or Kyrie or something, you'd see a little in-and-out dribble. Yes. You get to see, like, how the ball spins and everything like that. Even Chris Paul had some good ones. But then when you just see a guy that's just fast, I don't want to see him in slow-mo. That doesn't, I don't learn anything by just watching a fast dude in slow motion. So, yeah, that would have been really good. That probably would have been really good for Dwayne Wade. Another like fun macro thing actually about this season, I just remember because I brought that up, is that this is pretty much the last season where there were broadcasts that were both in HD and there were broadcasts that were in standard definition. Okay. So a lot of the finals footage when I was looking back at this was in standard definition, but actually could find a lot of highlights throughout the season when, especially Lakers games, Knicks games, where they were in HD. So big market teams actually had high def cameras, and they introduced high def as a whole concept came in like January 2003. Okay. And this was the 05-06 season, but you know, like it's a little bit slow to be adopted. And what's funny is like, it was kind of frustrating looking at this season and looking at all this footage in standard def to like find all of to research this, because as soon as I was like, oh, let me just peep what the next season looked like, everything's in HD. So this is the last season probably nobody actually really wants to look back at, which is why it's like we're going through the most arduous task of watching.
By the way, definition, I'll actually get that's one better. Thing I'll give a small olive branch to the nephews. I will admit that is one area that is different about basketball, which is because the quality of the broadcast levels up every decade by so much, almost exponentially. I will admit, the problem always will be in basketball is if you ever try going back to past eras from your own, you have to like acclimatize to what we're talking about here. Like, for example, if you've only watched like 2000s basketball and you watch an 80s game, no joke, like we're saying, because of the angle of the, like even the hoops and the way the court is, it's going to look so janky initially. Like it'll take you a while to like appreciate like a Larry Bird game or something, because it actually looks for real, like everything just looks worse essentially, like the quality's worse, even the angle's sometimes a bit too high up, if you know what I mean. Like sometimes even the nets, like the nets are for real, like the old fucking wooden ones, like it just looks way shoddier. So every year, every decade, it does get way better than that. So now obviously it looks slick as fuck now, it looks perfect now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything you could even do at this point that needs to be upgraded. Yeah, this is just like you're watching it in person. It's just about camera angles and maybe what replays they end up showing. But yeah.
By the way, to bring it all the way back, one thing I would say as well about this season is, like I said, I actually do think this is a great example of the type of seasons I love. Because if you notice, if you're a fan and you don't know this term, what I learned, I didn't know it myself, what I learned I love is I love counterfactuals. I love to think about what could have happened. What if, like we're saying, what if the Spurs win that series? What if the Pistons win the one against the Heat? I like those ones, you know. Because if you run those through, what you actually find out is, like, for example, like we were saying, what's cool about this season is there's a load of ways this could have gone. It could have gone differently in terms of who, like, for example, another thing like we were talking about with stars is these are also the seasons where, man, you have a lot of choices for MVP. And I'm not talking about now where now they claim it because everyone scores 30 points. Like, no, like you can go every direction. Like you can go with Steve Nash for the point guard play and set up the team. You can go with LeBron for athleticism. You can go with Kobe for like all around game and clutch and shit. Like you can have people, like I said, like Allen Iverson, still a beast. Loads of people at Dirk's mega on one of the best teams in the NBA. Tim Duncan's still like the foundation of a potential dynasty. Like, it's such a deep NBA at the time. And the cool thing as well is, like I say, it's not like you have one or two contenders. You have a lot of like really loaded contenders. I will say though, a point you made that I think is actually a good conclusion though, is this in some ways is almost the end of the era when maybe it's because the rules change, mean that like essentially offensive players can all be OP as fuck now. I agree with you. Back then, it's almost like they're doing old school GMing. They're just trying to get like a load of like good players or like above average players and fill out the whole bench. Whereas really, if you actually look at this era and the years going on, that's why people make super teams now. In reality, it's a lot easier to win with essentially like two all NBA first team players and then whoever than it is with like Dirk plus, you know, a bunch of like five, six, all right, or above average. Average players, you know, if there's just something about basketball where, like, I think it's because essentially to me, the thing that I actually love about basketball is a bit like Counter-Strike, is I've always said the brilliant thing about these two games is even if you perfectly scout what the other guy is going to do, if he really does execute it 10 out of 10, it usually works, which I actually find to be a very addictive quality. I think it's awesome. It makes it kind of cool to follow because you actually then can see, like, when someone is like the best player, the best team. And so I feel like maybe teams back then were trying to almost do like 80s and 90s roster building, because I think now you can be a bit more cynical. You just get your stars now and then you worry about the rest after that, you know.
If you look at actually the way that minutes were distributed for both of these teams in the finals, it actually seems like Miami was, and Pat Riley for that matter, were actually using the more modern spread of minutes because it's a lot more top heavy. Like the three guys that have the most minutes on both rosters have above 200 minutes, but then you kind of go to positions 4, 5, and 6 for the Heat and it's like everybody's above 170 minutes, but then you go to the Mavs in that same contract conversation and it's like 150 minutes, 147 minutes. And then there's all these guys that are chiming in with like 94, 82. And it's like they spread the minutes almost too evenly, too fairly. Like everybody should have a chance to show what they're worth in this one. But like the thing is that the Heat knew who their six guys were. Payton was actually like their seventh guy, yes. But it's still like he was a big drop off from like their sixth most minutes guy. He had like 40 less minutes in the entire series than their sixth most guy.
Yes.
Sixth most played guy. So yeah, like there was kind of a shift here. And I think in some ways actually for this series, I think that actually like I felt like the coaching was just better for the Heat. Like the Riley's coaching to me just felt more modern in the way that they approached some of the situations. And I'll go back to the point I made at the beginning of this. I think that actually, despite the fact that he won Coach of the Year in the season, I think Avery Johnson made a mistake with the starting lineup. I still think that, and this is like, again, one of those like things you're bringing up with like counterfactuals, like what if you just, instead of swapping out Griffin for Harris, why didn't you just keep Griffin as your main guy? Or like, that's like little things like that, where it's like probably in a way also why Riley is still just such a legendary figure in this space, because again, the Vegas odds were better for the Mavs. They should have won this one. And like then you actually look at some of the philosophies and principles that Riley took to this, and it's kind of what more people went to what he's doing as opposed to what Johnson was doing.
Yeah, on that note, that's also another thing, by the way. This is why I actually like doing shows in general. Because if you notice, my main thing is I hate narratives I think are shit, and I like to attack them and tear them down. And essentially, I just like to smash everyone's idols. That's my style. I gore all the sacred oxes. So one of them that I'm going to do right now is I actually despise it, dude, the way that they do Coach of the Year in the NBA. Because it is always just this. It's either the team was shit when you got there, and now they won a lot of games, regardless of what you did, by the way. Just if you do that, automatically you're Coach of the Year candidate. That's why most of the times it's not actually like Phil Jackson. If people don't know, people like Phil Jackson but very rarely ever win Coach of the Year. Like, they don't actually win it for being the best coaches, because the joke is, because their team's already really good because they established their team, people go, well then they can't be that good. It's like, it's the opposite. But okay, let's go into your insane world. And so you either get the person where it's the jump up, or you get guys like this where what you do is you get a guy where it's like, it's unexpected that they'd be doing well, and then the players all love them. The other guy that this reminds me of with Avery Johnson, because spoiler, Avery Johnson did not go on to be on one of the all-time great coaches. He reminds me of fucking little Scotty Brooks from the Thunder, where I told everyone, it's the same shit. I told them, you know what's going to be sad, guys? You love this guy because he had all these young up-and-coming players. He's making like deep runs. He's the reason you'll never win though, but guys like that, like we're saying, are capped. Their problem is like essentially the regular season coaches. They can do a really good job with a normal group of guys. But as we're talking about, when you get into playoff scenarios, it's like the superstar players. In the same way a superstar player can do something extra and steal you a game, a great coach can do that. They can figure out a rotation change, give one guy extra minutes, take the guy out, figure out something like a matchup change. They can do that one little thing that like nicks you that extra game. And I agree, by the way. I actually think Riley literally is an underrated coach. Like when people do that, like greatest coach of all time, it's like Phil Jackson, Popovich. Normally it stops there, by the way. I don't know, maybe they put like Red Auerbach or something from the old days. Dude, Riley is absolutely in that category. Like, think about this. People used to say when he was with the Lakers, yeah, but you had Magic and Kareem, right? Look after that. Dude, his Knicks were one of the teams that were absolutely the ones that could have beaten the Jordan Bulls. Like, they probably win a ring if Michael Jordan isn't Michael Jordan. Then after that, even that Heat team, that's not even that good a lineup of players. Like the Tim Hardaway Jr. morning one. It's all right. He has them in like outside contender status. And then with this team, he wins a ring, as we're saying, underdog. Like, I think his actual career, he's one of the only coaches noticing that all-time great one. That's like moving orgs and totally different players. Greg Popovich stays in one place and is like a semi-GM. Phil Jackson just goes from the greatest players ever. Like, the difference is Riley, for real, took a gamut of types of jobs, almost in every type of scenario, and he's just good in every one. Like, essentially, as far as I can tell, he's like the greatest floor raiser probably ever. You know what I mean? Like, any team he joins, it feels like you're automatically in the playoffs. And if you get a star player, you probably have a chance to win, you know?
It's like Kerrigan versus like a Glaive or something.
Yeah, it's a good analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. Pat Riley is the Kerrigan of NBA coaching for me. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. But no, I'll just say I think this is a great season. Like I said, we'll pick another one. We'll do another cool one. We'll keep that secret, obviously. People can. All right, here's what we'll do. I'll play the modern meta. Tell us in the comments which season you would like. Spoiler, if you know my content, I'm not going to do yours, but you might essentially, you might coincidentally have a blind lock hit and hit the one that we say. So you at least get to feel good. You get to believe that you had a hit. So go for it.
The real season does start in like 2 weeks. So maybe we could do some preview.
Yeah,
we could do some preview.
We can do something.